Hi, this is Joanne, and welcome to the Solution for Success weekly expert interviews presented by Nashville Success Summit. Today's guest is Jeff Brasher with Alliant Capital Advisors, and Jeff is going to talk to us about how to get the maximum value out of our companies when it's time to sell.
If you would, give me an overview of what is your Alliant Capital Advisors. I think you're one of the partners, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you give me an overview of what it is that you do, what the business is all about?
Yeah, I can, Joanne. Thank you again for having me today. What we are a business brokerage intermediary company located in Brentwood, Tennessee, and what makes us a little bit different is our company, Alliant Capital Advisors, is the largest business brokerage company in a four-state region, and all we do is help independent owners sell their businesses throughout the southeastern United States. We do not sell commercial real estate. We do not sell residences. Our brokerage company, again, only sells with independently owned companies of individual sellers, again, throughout the southeastern United States. So we're a little bit different. We don't carry three or four flags. We carry one, which is basically our only business is selling your business, and that's on the front page of our website.
Excellent. So and along with selling business means you're helping other people to buy a business. Right.
Exactly, yeah. If you actually look at many in the dictionaries of an intermediary, it's basically bringing two parties together. And,
exactly.
That's to put it simple, we bring two people together to see if there's a good rapport and trust. Many, many times where there's not a good trust or rapport between buyer and seller, we can easily see that and pretty much say that will be a transaction that will never take place. It's all about rapport, and that's what we try to bring to the table.
And I wouldn't have guessed that. I would have thought that a lot of it was all about the terms and the, you know, getting the financing and such. But you're right. It's a people business, right? It's bringing two people.
Yeah, we have a very, very disciplined process. And all those things that you just mentioned, the financing, the buyer management, due diligence, negotiating offers, closing documents, et cetera, all very important parts of our process, and they come throughout it, but we have to get the first box that we have to check off is bringing buyer and seller together and making sure that there's a working relationship there, because if a seller can't trust a buyer, we'll be the first ones to tell Mr. Seller, don't sell him your business. If the buyer can't trust the seller, and in many cases, the seller will become also the banker. Many of our transactions have a piece of seller financing involved now. And if a buyer, if there's no trust there from a buyer's perspective, don't buy the company, Mr. Buyer. So a very important part of our process. And if you'll notice, in real estate, for example, you keep both parties apart. You don't let them talk. You do the open houses with nobody there. You do the offering sheets without people being together. In our business, it's all about bringing people together. It truly is.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective I hadn't considered.
Yeah, it's really the opposite. And when we start passing along letters of intent, et cetera, we don't pass them back and forth three or four times. We bring people together. If there's a conflict in price or terms or whatever the issue might be, we bring everybody together. So, again, we feel like this process is a winner, and we really don't vary from it much at all.
Excellent. So what would drive someone to come looking for you? Like, why would someone need your services?
It's twofold. There's kind of a tough situation and a good situation. The tough situations are all going to be wrapped upon personal circumstance. Many, many times, Joanne, we'll get calls or referrals from our network from sellers that have had a personal circumstance happen in their lives that require them to sell. An example would be a death in the family, a death of a spouse, sick parents, a divorce, a personal situation that pretty much puts a priority on them selling as soon as they can. And those are the tough ones. You don't want to call it a fire sale, but it's something that a circumstance is pressing the sell of a business. What we would like to see more of is we want to become part of an exit strategy team for a seller. Every seller is going to have a good attorney. Every seller is going to have a good accountant, CPA. Every seller is going to have a good financial advisor, and that's their team of people that are very close to them to secure the success both individually and through their business, something that's very important to them, their business. What we want to become is another member of that team to start talking about exit strategies, because we can help a seller to look at his business, to do certain things, to position it to really get the best possible selling price they can get at the proper time. And if you have that person, it's just another key player to help position themselves to get the best value of their business when it comes time to sell.
Right, and those are the ones who aren't under any kind of rush, right? There's no external circumstances forcing them to sell. They're planning it
right,
for some time.
Right, right. And at Alliant Capital, kind of our business model, there's absolutely no charge to be that partner. We don't have any type of retainer, any kind of upfront marketing cost. We're basically want to partner again with that seller to be part of his senior team that can help value his business, can help position it to be put on the market at the proper time, and there's absolutely no rush. And the better they can be prepared to do that again, I think it would be the opportunity to maximize that value.
You know, there's a school of thought that says you should start planning your exit strategy right up front when you're doing your business plan, and actually plan how you want to exit the business, whether it's 5 years from now or 50 or whatever. So do you agree with that theory, or would you say that it's more of talking about exit strategy when you're getting closer to wanting to exit?
Yeah, I think anybody that has a plan, there's absolutely nothing wrong, or I think that's fantastic. I'm a very pre-planned, detailed person. I know there's another name we won't use that we can call those people. But in our experience, it tells us to properly think about exiting and, again, maximizing value of your business. It's 3 to 5 years out.
Okay. So let's talk about that. What are the things that would drive the value of a business? So if I plan to sell in 5 years, what should I be doing now to get the most value out of my business?
The first thing we're going to do is we're going to talk, and we're going to help value your business as it is today. So we're going to stay there, and we've got the software with our company. We're going to get your last 3 years of financial tax returns. We're going to restructure your financial, and we're going to say most individuals are going to look at evaluation as an income-based approach. They're going to want to know, Joanne, very basically, if I come in and buy Mr. Seller's business, how much money can I expect to make? That number, what we're looking for, is what we call SDE, which is Seller's Discretionary Earnings. You're going to take the income of the company plus the salary that you pay yourself plus any discretionary expenses that you charge to the company that benefit you as the owner, and we're going to come up with a number. And let's just say, to make it easy, that your seller's discretionary earnings, Mr. Seller, is $100,000. You make $100,000 a year from running this company. Then we're going to look at your industry, and we're going to say your industry is paying different multiples. And just to give you an example, the restaurant business is probably only paying right now like a 1 to 1.5, maybe a top of a 2 multiple of that $100,000, that's what your restaurant would be worth. So it's very simple. $100,000 times 1.5, Mr. Seller, your business is probably going to be worth about $150,000. I just sold a laboratory down in Georgia, a medical laboratory. Those multiples are like more like between a 5 and a 7, because the medical industry right now are paying very, very high multiples. Going back to your original question, some of the things that kind of move that multiple also will be length of service. How long have you been in the industry? Tell me about your competition. How competitive is it? You have a niche within the industry that you're in. Barriers for people getting into your industry into the future. You know, are there big barriers? Are there little barriers? Tell me about your customer base. Do you have a lot of different customers, or do you have a lot of eggs in one basket? Does one customer represent like 60% of your volume? That's not good if that's the case, because there'd be a huge risk there. And also a simple question as far as location. Do you ship a lot of products? Are you close to interstates? What's your shipping charges? There are a multitude of variables out there that we look at. We work with the sellers to look at their valuation, to look at their expenses. We can compare them to industry standards and give them a guide to make those better in the future, because, again, if they can increase their profitability of their company, it's just that much more money they're going to get when they try to sell it.
I get it. It makes sense, actually, when you lay it out like that, because those of us who are not quite as financially astute might start thinking that there's some magic to it, but it actually seems pretty logical.
I can tell you one common mistake, probably one of the biggest mistakes, is we work with a lot of manufacturing companies. And they'll say that, Jeff, I'm doing $2 million a year in revenue, but I'm not bringing any money to the bottom line. We're not making any money as a company. Well, it's hard for me to say that that company's worth anything when all that effort is bringing zero profitability. And then one of the common mistakes is the seller will say, well, Jeff, I've got $1 million worth of equipment in the back. Surely it's worth the price I paid for that equipment. And I'll say, Mr. Seller, bear with me here. All of that equipment, whether it's $1 million or $10 million worth of equipment, what is that equipment producing? From a buyer's perspective, it's producing zero. So it's worth zero to a buyer. And that upsets sellers sometimes, because it's like, good grief, you're telling me my company's not worth anything, and I know I got $1 million worth of equipment in the back. Sometimes we have to tell sellers what they need to hear versus what they want to hear. And that's a very important line for us. And unfortunately, somebody has to tell them that. And with our business model and our integrity that we try to bring to the table, that's what's going to come out. Sometimes we tell them what they need to hear versus what they want to hear.
Right.
We will turn down as many listing opportunities as we take, simply because since our business model doesn't pay us anything up front, all of the risk and all of the work and effort is on our part. So again, if I value a business and think it's worth $1 million, and the seller says I have to have $1.5 million, most, just about every single case is, Mr. Seller, I'm sorry, I can't help you because I know I can't get that price.
Right.
And I think there's a respect there. And many, many times, a year or two down the road, they'll come back to us and say, hey, I kind of know where you're coming from. Tell me what we think we can get now, and let's go ahead and try to sell my company. So
let's take a scenario where you've done a valuation of a business and you say it's worth $1 million and the seller wants $1.5 million. Are there things that the business owner can do to make their business actually worth that $1.5 million? I mean, is there advice you can give them, or will you give them to help them?
Oh, by all means. And how, we'll start off again with their report card. We'll start off with their tax return, our income statement, our profit and loss statement. And we'll be able to go down through there and say, we can tell you, Mr. Seller, in the industry average that you're in, the cost of goods is 35%. You're running 42. Now, I can't tell you, I'm not going to dig in there and tell you exactly what you should or shouldn't be doing, but all of your competitors and people like you are running 7% less. Might be something you want to get into, bring in your CPA or whoever you want, but another great one would be payroll, just simple wages and payroll. Your industry average is 22 to 24%. You're running almost 30%. Again, I'm not going to tell you how to run your business, but I can tell you that your competitors are running 8% less than you. If you were to get in line with company industry averages, your profit would be good enough for you to get your $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. But right now, you're not at it. The other part of that, again, is their subjective multiple questions that we kind of went through earlier. If all of your customers are in one basket, it's going to hurt your multiplier. So get out there and get some more customers. Another good question is capital. Do you have all the equipment that you need? If you need to go out and spend a little money to get the equipment that's needed to drive your sales, you need to do that. if you have a lease arrangement that's not good and you need to renegotiate your lease. So there's a multitude of subjective things that we would go through also to give them suggestions on where they could get a higher number for that to obviously lead to an increase in price.
Now, it seems like all of that would be incredibly valuable information for any business owner to have, whether they're ready to sell or not.
Well, that's why that's why, again, if you're looking at 5 years down the road, hey, why not start that now and have that knowledge now, so when 3 or 5 years does come down the road, you've already instituted those things and feel like you're maximizing the profitability of your company. And if you're doing that, you're only going to maximize the price that you're going to get out of your business.
Right. There's no downside to doing this.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And the other thing we haven't mentioned at all, Joanne, is the demographics of our society. I mean, I'm a baby boomer. There's so many people that are getting into the late, you know, early to mid to late 50s, early 60s, that demographics alone are telling us that there's actually a percent, that 75% of the independently owned businesses are going to change hands within the next 10 years.
Wow.
It's a big number. It's a big number. So regardless of all the personal things that could happen, like divorce, sickness, or somebody just thinking about wanting to sell, I mean, we're getting older as a generation that are going to have a way to sell their company. So many people these days have children that have absolutely zero interest in running the family company like we used to do that years and years ago. Most of those kids are educated, have gone to college, have gotten good jobs. The last thing they want to do is keep running mom and dad's business that they've been around for 20 or 25 years. Pure demographics tells us that we're going to have a lot of people exiting independently owned businesses just based purely on the aging demographics. And
so now with that large of a family of businesses about to hit the market, why would someone who's up and coming want to buy one of those businesses instead of starting something on their own?
Yeah, two things, I guess, and I'll address that one in a second, but we have, every week we interview potential buyers that are coming from corporate America that have either been laid off, given the pink slip, consolidated, or whatever, that are in their early 40s, maybe even early 50s, that have got a pretty good savings account. They've gotten a good severance package. And basically, there's a lot of people out there that are tired of working in corporate America with all the restrictions and all the things that are demanded upon corporate America, and they're saying to themselves that, hey, I want to be my own boss. I might not need to make the salary that I was making in corporate America, but I want to have a quality of life, and I want to be my own boss, and I want to make my own decisions and live by my own standards. I want to buy my own business. So we have a ton of potential buyers that fit that category. And the reason that they would come and look for an existing business versus starting their own is twofold. The first and foremost is you're going to get an existing customer base that has been built over usually a number of years that's been consistent, and that gives you a more of a consistent chance for a cash flow than what you would be for starting a brand new business. Also, with a brand new business, you have, in many cases, a build-out cost. If you try to start a franchise, if you have to go out and build a building, if you have to go out and buy all this new equipment, there is a cash outlay of obviously starting a new company that is extraordinarily high compared to buying an existing business. Those would be my two highest reasonings.
Okay. And actually, the second one kind of surprised me a little bit because, you know, when you talk about build-out costs, yeah, I get it, that you're going to have a certain amount of plant and equipment that you have to account for, but I would have thought that would also be rolled into the cost of buying an existing business.
Well, but remember, yeah, you're exactly right, but remember our conversation earlier. When you go out and start a business, you're buying stuff brand new.
Right.
When you pay for a business, regardless of how much equipment it has or doesn't have, you're only paying for the equipment for the profitability that it's paying the seller at that time.
Right.
So, again, if a seller bought equipment for $2 million 10 years ago, but the cash flow only substantiates that a person paid for the company $1 million, that's what the seller's going to get. And so there might be a loss there because he started that company 10 years ago and had to pay $2 million just to put the equipment in. But from a buyer's perspective, regardless of what that equipment's worth of at Blue Book or at replacement value or whatever value you want to get, what's important to the buyer is it's only as good or worth as much as the cash flow that that equipment is producing.
Okay, that's a great point. Yeah, it makes sense when you describe it. I guess some of the assumptions that I've had up until this conversation are just that, assumptions, right? And we've just proved them wrong. I like the explanation you're giving. It makes perfect sense. You talked about how there's this wave of sellers that you're looking at, and so you're finding also from the folks exiting the corporate world that there's also a domain of buyers, so it's a pretty active market.
We always have more buyers than sellers. It's just a general rule. What drives our business and really what it starts with, it's number one without question. It's our listings is the heart of our business. On our website, we've got over 90 business opportunities out there for people to look at. And the inventory of our listings is truly what drives our business.
And most of those would keep confidential, right, so that the employees don't necessarily need to know that the business is for sale.
Oh, everything. If you'll look on our, again, our website is alliantbrokers.com. We'll probably use the word confidentiality five or six times for every page. It's everything that we do is in confidence. The last thing in a seller's mind is you do not want your employees to know. You don't want your competition to know. You don't want your vendors to know. We keep everything in confidence. So when you look up a business, it's going to be what we call blind. It's going to be a manufacturing company in Southeast United States, and they're doing $2 million in sales with a cash flow of $400,000. We'll be contacted on that, and before we give out the name and the details of this business, there are two things that we have to have. And those two things, we make a commitment to our sellers that we're going to get those before they get to know the name of your company. The first and most important is going to be a confidentiality statement or an NDA, a non-disclosure, which says we're going to share information with you and you are not to tell anyone. And you sign that. The second thing that we're going to qualify a buyer on, Joanne, is the financial ability to buy a company. We've got companies as small as $50,000 for sale up to $15 million for sale. If somebody's got $20,000 in the bank and that's all they got, they don't need to be hearing about a company that's selling for $15
million.
So we financially qualify buyers also. And so, again, based on their financial strength, can they do a transaction to the level that they might be looking for? And the other thing that makes us a little different, if it's a Nashville buyer, we are insistent on meeting them. Because if they try to wiggle out of trying to meet me personally, they're probably just going to be a tire kicker and not a very good buyer. And I don't want to take a chance on sharing my seller's name with them if they're not willing to make the commitment to at least come and meet me. If somebody is serious and we're going to share detailed information, surely they would want to meet us. And we're located in Brentwood, Tennessee. It's very easy to find us in Maryland Farms. But if they start to wiggle out of that, there's about a 100% chance I'm not going to tell them the name of the company.
Yeah, well, it's a simple request, and it goes a long way to building that trust that you talked about.
You couldn't agree more. And, you know, a buyer needs to have trust with me. If I'm representing the seller and I'm telling him stuff, he's got to feel good about me. And I would tell him, if you don't feel good about my company or feel good about me, then don't use us as a brokerage company to buy a business. Because our rapport and trust and integrity to us goes beyond anything else we can do.
So, Jeff, how long have you been with Alliant? How long have you been in this industry?
I've been in this industry like 6 years. I've been a partner for the last almost 3.5. There's three partners that own the company. My two partners have got 15 years of experience, and we have a total of all of us. There's a total of 11 brokers in our office. We've got listings in Kentucky and Arkansas and Arizona and Georgia and Florida. And obviously we do concentrate on the Tennessee area, do a lot of business out of Birmingham, Chattanooga, Louisville. Really do cover a big piece of the Southeast with obviously a concentration in the Tennessee area.
Right. Yeah, because I thought you had said you were in four states is where you were your primary
right.
coverage.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so tell me then, we were talking to a room full of business owners, small business owners, sole proprietor type folks, and you were going to give them one piece of advice. What advice would you give them?
It would be two-legged, and this is it. Start your exiting process 3 to 5 years in advance. The second piece is keep very good records and clean financials. And you would think that would be a given, but there's so many great entrepreneurs out there that love to be out there talking to the customers, talking with the employees, selling the business and doing that. But there's a hatred for numbers. There's a hatred for records. And you know what I'm talking about, the back office stuff. And if that's not your passion, don't do it. But have somebody there that can do it for you. Unfortunately, I'm working with a couple that's getting a divorce out of Texas. They fired their bookkeeper at the end of last year, and so when I ask for specifics, they're not able to give them to me. And so my point to them is they got a very sellable business. It's in a niche position in their industry. I feel very confident that we can sell it. But remember when I talked about if you don't do certain things, it's going to take the price of your business down because you haven't done them. Even though I can show a revenue number, they don't have very clear and good records and financials on expenses, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, it's going to take their multiple down, which is going to take their price of their business down.
Mm-hmm.
We need to tell them the reality of the business. And if we got into due diligence and there's not good records, it's going to make a buyer very apprehensive of buying their company. But I tell you, John, again, start your exit process. Have that partner, have that person that's in your corner to help you, and start it 3 to 5 years in advance so you're not in a position where you have to have a fire sale. And
mm-hmm.
secondly, very simply, have good financials and good clean records so you can prove everything that you say.
Before we wrap up, I really would like for you to let our audience know how they can get in touch with you and if you have any preference on information that they would share with you if they're ready to start that 3 to 5 year planning.
Yeah, and most importantly, again, is to review our website. Again, it's Alliant Brokers, and that's Alliant, alliantbrokers.com. We've got a blog. You'll see a lot of interesting blogs on there referring to both selling and buying and valuating. You can look at me. You'll see our team there. You'll see myself in a little bio that I just updated. Then we'll have areas of both selling and buying a business, and it's some good information. Our website, we're very proud of it, and will really give you a feel for who we are. Secondly, my email is on the website. It's simply Brasher at AlliantBroker.com. My phone number's in the website. Any kind of contact information is going to be in the website. We just love to have a chance to sit down and talk with people. There's absolutely no pressure to list. There's no pressure to do anything. It's simply an opportunity to share with what we do, to hear about their company, to possibly start a relationship and a process that might last for years. And if that's the case, we're fine with that because we feel like that we'll build up enough trust and rapport in that time that we review things periodically, that when it does come time to say, hey, it's time for me to walk away, again, you can maximize your business. So I hope that's given you everything from my standpoint. And, again, we're real proud of our website and everything that it does try to tell either a prospective seller or buyer.
Yes, I went through your website, and it is a great website, and I learned a lot from it as well. But your conversation today and the wisdom you shared with us was invaluable, and I thank you for spending the time with us today.
Joanne, thank you so much, and look forward to meeting you and speaking with you shortly.
That was Jeff Brasher, one of the partners at Alliant Capital Advisors. Thank you for spending the time with us this week, and thank you for listening to our expert interview series. As always, you can get a copy of this recording as well as a transcript for this and all of our previous interviews at our website at NashvilleSuccessSummit.com. Have a great week now, and we'll talk to you soon.